A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 95. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of The Flip Side of Dominic Hyde and its sequel, Another Flip for Dominic. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So these were two 90-minute TV plays from the BBC Play for Today series that ran in 1980 and 1982. They had a great little mix of time travel and humor and romance as well. So it was a fun little series.
Absolutely. These two shows we're talking about here, and we'll get on with a bit more of the story from the first play, The Flip Side of Dominic Hyde. Our time traveler, Dominic Hyde, has used his flying saucer to travel back from 2130 back to 1980 London. And rather illegally, for their rules of time travel, he has landed and is travelling and walking around the streets of London, actually seeking his one of his ancestors.
Yes, he's looking for his great-great-grandfather, who has the same name as him, Dominic Hyde. And much of the humour in this comes from Dominic's puzzlement and sort of culture shock at 1980s life and 1980s language, because the people of the future in this speak in sort of a strange lingo of English that's a little different. So he's having trouble understanding people and understanding money and so on. And people look at how he's dressed and this big hat he has to protect him from the sun, and people think he's some kind of priest or from some kind of strange religious order. So there's a lot of fun fish-out-of-water culture shock stuff in here.
Absolutely, yes. There's much on the theme of culture shock. He's in amongst this rather lively group of young Londoners who obviously live and work around the bustling Portobello Road in London, which Dominic Hyde is seeking, although he refers to it as Port Below, I believe, Brian.
He had initially said Port Beale, which was his great aunt trying to remember the name of it, and they came up with Port Beale, which they figured out had to be Portobello.
Oh, right. And in this group of Londoners, as well as the character Jane, who we've discussed before, there's several other rather fun individuals, and even an appearance very briefly from a very young Dennis Lawson, who would obviously go on to much bigger and better things in all sorts of TV and films, including the Star Wars films. And when we talked about Jekyll, he was a major part of that show.
I think he had already done some of the Star Wars films and was yet to do more as well. He was sort of in the middle of those as a minor character, one of the fighter pilots.
And here he is briefly in this play. And we've mentioned Carolyn Langrish playing Jane, who was Dominic's love interest back in 1980. Despite the culture shock, despite Dominic's puzzlement at being unable to make a cup of coffee or to buy a drink in the pub because he doesn't seem to understand money, they start to develop a sort of romantic interest, and we can see them falling in love as this play progresses.
Yes, that's handled very well. And of course, he already has a relationship with Ava, his partner in the future. And the interesting thing is that he does not conceal his relationship in the past. He doesn't hide it from Ava. So it develops some interesting notes of things, sort of with the social differences between the two different societies and their relationships and how everyone deals with them. So it's kind of interesting stuff. And of course, he is continuing to search for this ancestor of his. And his clues are really only the name and a short piece of recorded film with no sound that he has of little bits where someone is out on a beach somewhere. And he doesn't know very much from that, but he just has these little bits of information about it.
Yes, and we should say that he's sort of zipping backwards and forwards in time. He doesn't spend all his time back in 1980. He returns to Ava and, as you say, discusses what's been happening with her, much to her puzzlement.
Yes, I don't think he can stay in the past for more than a couple days, and usually only for, especially in the first show, usually only for a day or so. So he's bouncing back to the flip side, to the past, having some time there, and then bouncing back and having some time in his own time in the future. So there is this conflict that builds up between the two different relationships, and just some interesting bits of things going on there.
So all in all, an interesting show, which, as you say, came out in 1980 on the Play for Today strand on BBC. And it was very well received, Brian. It was a critical and rating success for the BBC. Very well regarded, very well reviewed in the papers and on the TV review show. There's a show called Did You See, which was on television at the time, where they would basically review three different television shows a week. And on the DVD extras that we've been watching, there is a short clip of that review show where they talk about Dominic Hyde and generally review it very favorably.
And of course, based on all of this positive feedback, there was very quickly talk about a sequel. And there was even talk about making a series based on this. But, of course, they did look at this more. And the original creator and the original writers, Alan Gibson and Jeremy Paul, wrote a second 90-minute play,
which was called Another Flip for Dominic, and was broadcast by the BBC again in Play for Today. And that went out in 1982. And the setup for the sequel is that things have moved on since the first play. Dominic no longer flips. He no longer travels in time. In fact, he's now an instructor who is obviously teaching other corros or correspondents about travelling back to the flip side, Brian.
Yes, and the events of the first play have become sort of a legend among the other corros. No one is officially supposed to know that Dominic Hyde had landed, but there is this sort of reputation or rumor that it may have happened. So one of Dominic's students, Pyrrhus Bonington, has gone on his usual flip. He's gone back to the flip side, and he hasn't come back. No one's quite sure where he is. So Caleb Line, the sort of boss character who's this sinister sort of person who, you never know quite what he's doing, he calls on Dominic, interrupts his Christmas dinner, and tells Dominic what happened and says, look, you've landed before. You're the one who has to go back to rescue him.
That's right, yes. So Dominic is summoned to Caleb Line and basically has to travel back to the flip side, which he hasn't done for 2 years. So he travels back to 1982 to try and find this student, Pyrrhus Bonington. And there he is again in 1982 London, and a little bit puzzled as ever. So he turns to the one person he knows, which is, of course, Jane, who he had a relationship with in the first play. And he turns to her as somebody who can help him with his search for Pyrrhus. But of course, Brian, that causes some complications.
Of course it does. And the old passions and, old relationships are rekindled. And the relationships become much more complicated this time. Dominic now has a young son with Ava in 2130 or 2130 something or other. And in 1982, Jane has a son, Dominic's son, and she also has a relationship with someone else. And there's another potential relationship for Ava as well. So all of these three key characters seem to have multiple relationships and various children involved. So it gets a little bit complex, and there are decisions and choices about which relationship should be pursued. And again, the sort of cultural things about, in the future, they don't seem to have quite the same views on relationships. So which things are allowed in that context and which are not? There are all these little things come into play.
Yes, I mean, quite a lot re-examined in this second play. But there's also a bit more running about, and there's some physical danger and scrapes for Dominic and Pyrrhus. And also, I think, a little bit more discussion of time travel paradoxes and the effects of their actions on the flip side. And in particular, there is something happens which almost leads to a sort of Back to the Future scenario with the possibility of some person in the future ceasing to exist. And Dominic has to act to try and prevent this. So quite a lot of talk in this second play about choices and relationships, and also about the effects of this time travel stuff. All in all, quite interesting stuff to talk about, Ryan.
On, Ida. I wish to land Monday.
What?
No sense. I wish to land and you'll help me, friend. 1 hour, that's all I need. You can deflect from Caleb, you know you can.
I'm complacent. I like my job. Why do I risk it because you're Zulooney?
I know he's on the flip side, on my circuit. I must meet him. Once. You shield me. No danger.
Landings are forbidden for good reason.
Remember Teddy Cochran?
Who's Teddy Cochran?
Oh, I was just telling Alaric about your Olympic traveller in 1936. The one you KO'd for the journey, and why you couldn't land him even though you wanted to.
It was a Coro called Teddy Cochran, Ava. He landed in US, Ohio, 1955 against orders. Killed a dog. Changed history. The dog was going to raise an alarm for a fire. People died in the blaze who should have lived. One of them, an architect whose buildings fell down because he wasn't there to build them.
I think that leads us into our typical discussion of our feelings about this, the good and the bad. So, Eamon, what did you think about these two Dominic Hyde plays? What did you like about them?
I like the ideas. I like the good science fiction ideas which are put up there on the screen. But perhaps even better than that is the way they just use those as a vehicle to tell some interesting stories about people and relationships, and to do it in a sort of humorous and slightly romantic way as they go. So I thought that worked very well, Brian.
Yes, I would agree with that. There is this idea of science fiction being used to hold a mirror up to society or to reality and use it to examine the norms and to look at different things that are part of our normal life, but from a different perspective. This pair of plays does that very well. It looks at our society. It looks at this sort of variant future society as a way to look at our society. It looks at the relationships and Dominic's point of view on our time as a way to examine both society, but also relationships in general, and this particular relationship, and you know how people have relationships. And I think that was very well done.
Yes, it was. Yeah, they handled it very well. Neatly scripted, I think, by Gibson and Paul. So that part looks good. And the look and the sound and the feel of the production, I think, are quite impressive, Brian. The sets and the locations are well used.
Yes, I like the look of the future that they had. It, in many ways, really does not look dated. Of course, in many ways, the hairstyles and some of the clothing and things are based on early 80s kinds of things. But the things that are meant to look futuristic, most of them still look reasonably futuristic. There are a few bits of technology that don't, that look a little dated. But the overall look of things and the concept of how things work in the future that they set up still feels futuristic, and I think still lasts pretty well. And I like the idea of this sort of Japanese-inspired apartment set where obviously they have constraints on space and, you know, have to make their space very efficient. And, you know, the kitchen is sort of obviously very small, and the bedroom is sort of just in the other side of the living room, but it's meant to sort of make it feel open. So that was sort of a really nice look to it, and something that I thought was particularly good.
Yeah, that is very good. The futuristic apartment and the way they live in it does work very well. And we've mentioned the holographic musicians playing Lennon and McCartney music as if it was classical music on strings. That's very effective. And of course, as we've said, Brian, it does set up a quite neat joke for Dominic in the past when he meets real physical musicians.
That's right. And in this future, they even had some of the musicians were wearing Renaissance type costumes and playing a lute or other, you know, sort of Renaissance style stringed instruments, but playing Beatles music. And that was something that I thought was really neat. That was just this odd combination of things that I thought fit very well. And the other sort of details, they had voice-controlled computer called Sue that they would ask Sue questions or ask Sue to do things. And that seemed very, very reasonable and sort of a nice way of doing things. I thought it worked very well.
Okay. So it was a lot of the effects and the production that we like. What about the flying saucer, Brian? What would you say about that?
Well, the flying saucer is not great, but for what it was, I thought it was okay. You know, it was quite obvious when you're looking at it that they can physically lift it up to 100 feet or two, you know, they can lift it up to some level, and then they have to do a little animated effect to make it sort of disappear into a blur and shoot off to travel into the future. But it, you know, was a physical thing that the person could get into, and that was very clear, and that was nice that it looked, that, you know, it clearly was as big as it was supposed to be and not a little miniature. So that was nice. I thought for what it was, I thought it was okay.
Yeah, it's not too bad. They tried to conceal some of the saucer effects with a lot of sort of smoke and clouds, which helps a little bit. But as you say, it's quite clearly a physical effect. It's obviously been winched up by a crane. But there you go, not too bad. And of course, it does set up this brilliant conceit that we have talked about, which is the idea that flying saucer sightings or UFO sightings actually are time travelers from the future. So we have to accept it for that, Brian, don't we?
Yes, I think at one point in the 1980s time frame, they even show a photo of a flying saucer sighting, and Dominic sees it and realizes it's one of them. And that was a nice little moment.
Yeah. Now, we always like to talk about the performances. I think we've got some pretty good performances throughout here, Brian, from all the leads and from the supporting cast.
Yeah, I think it's pretty solid all in all. I quite enjoyed the relationship with Dominic and Jane. I also liked the relationship with Dominic and Ava. It was more awkward because they're using this sort of future context and the future lingo, but it was pretty nice too. And we have the elderly great aunt, who is the only person basically in the future time frame who sort of remembers the past and what it used to be like in the 20th century or 21st century. And that was a nice little performance, and the interactions between her remembering the past and Dominic having visited the past, those were very nice as well.
Yes, the aunt played by Sylvia Coleridge, I believe, and again, picked out on our Facebook group by Tony, who also mentioned her neat little turn as this sort of memory of the past who still exists in the future. So yeah, that's a nice little performance. And of course, Patrick McGee as Caleb Lyne, a sort of very sinister, controlling performance, and his last TV appearance. So that's quite good to see him again, Brian.
Yes, it was. I also liked how they moved things along from the first show to the second show. I think the first one was better. It was sort of more specific to the concept of what it was doing. But the second one was also very good. And in the second one, they sort of moved everything along with both Dominic and his setting in the future, and also Jane and her relationship and so on in the 1980s time frame, and the various things going on. They added a couple of new characters that sort of up the ante in some ways, but still remain true to a lot of the ideas. So I thought that was a very nice way of continuing it. It was more than just a straightforward, dull kind of sequel that you might get on some things.
Okay, very good. Were there any parts of the two shows that were less good that you had problems with, Brian?
Well, the thing that I had problems with at the beginning was the language they use in the future. They have this sort of lingo or slang that they talk with in the future time frame that is very sort of abbreviated and clipped with words missing and things sort of done in an odd way. And I think that was a great thing for them to do. And I think in a lot of ways it really shined. But the first time I was watching it, for the first chunk of it, I was having trouble engaging with this show. I found it very awkward because I didn't know to expect this kind of thing. And it just wasn't grabbing me. It started to grab me more once you brought things into the 1980s time frame, and once you start hearing a little bit more of it and get used to it. At this point, I really enjoy that future language, what they do. but at the beginning I found it tough to get into.
Yeah, there's always that little bit of problem with these futuristic slangs that screenwriters adapt sometimes.
So what about you? Did you have any difficulties here? Anything you thought was a little weaker?
No, not really. There's nothing major in the way of weaknesses or negative points about these two shows. The only thing, I suppose, well, there's a couple of things. One is that they might seem a little bit lightweight compared to some of the stuff we've been talking about recently on British Invaders. You know, they are... At the heart, there are a couple of romantic comedies with some interesting science fiction features. And I think the other thing is that perhaps if you're, you know, familiar with science fiction and the science fiction programs, some of the twists in Dominic Hyde are perhaps a bit obvious. I mean, we've tried not to give them away as we've gone along, but it won't take too much to work out some of the time travel twists involved in this show. But apart from that, on the whole, not much to say, Brian.
Yeah, the main writer on this, Jeremy Paul, was not a science fiction writer in general and not a science fiction fan. So he was sort of coming to the time travel concepts anew and did some things that were in some ways a little bit the sort of thing that we've seen before, but also used the time travel logic in a way that is a little bit different than not exactly what we're used to. May not add up in the logical sense in all ways, depending what kind of system you're expecting. But that did sort of put a bit of a different twist on it, both good and bad. But really, I think these things we're talking about as negatives are pretty minor. I think this was a pretty strong show.
Yes, it's all involved and all part of it. So yeah, quite fun. An interesting show for us to discuss.
Absolutely. So we should talk about availability.
Okay, good. In Region 2 here, it is available on a single disc DVD release from 2005, which includes both the shows, The Flip Side of Dominic Hyde and the sequel, Another Flip. It also features just one single DVD extra, which is that brief television review from the 1980s show Did You See? However, it does have a quite an impressively large viewing notes booklet included with the DVD. And as ever, we should point out that the production notes booklet does include quite a lot of spoilers, so you probably want to watch the shows first before reading that. And that DVD is available on Amazon here in the UK for just £5, and it's also available for rental on the Love Film site. So fairly easy to get hold of here in Region 2.
Yes, unfortunately there is no Region 1 release of the Dominic Hyde shows. The Region 2 disc is actually available as an import on Amazon.com from the marketplace for about $20 or $25, and it can be imported from Amazon.co.uk quite easily. It isn't listed on Amazon.ca, and it isn't on Netflix, but it is not that expensive and pretty easy to import.
Okay. It is also, as we record, currently available. Both shows are on YouTube, in divided up into several parts, as is the way with YouTube. But quite how long that will stay up there at the moment, I don't know. And the quality is perhaps not great on YouTube. So you may, if you can get hold of the DVD, you'd be probably advised to.
So I think that brings us neatly to our recommendations. Eamon, what would you recommend for this?
I think this is a thumbs up. This is a fun show. As you say, the sequel is perhaps not quite up to the high standard of the first one, but still enjoyable to watch. The only thing I would say is that this is slightly lighter, more sort of humorous stuff than some of the stuff we've been watching recently. Not that that's a bad thing. So yes, I'd say this is one to check out, Brian.
Yes, I will agree with that. This is a good show. It's well worth checking out. It's very well done. Performances, humor, a little bit of romance, and time travel used in a slightly different way at times than what you might be used to, but nonetheless used very well. Nice tight scripting. So definitely I would say this is a recommendation. It's good stuff.
Yep. Continues quite a good run of shows we've been talking about here on British Invaders.
It certainly does. So in summary, The Flip Side of Dominic Hyde was about Dominic Hyde, a Kuro or a correspondent from the future, whose job is to travel to the past, in this case 1980, in a flying saucer, and observe details of public transportation from the air and return to the future with, hopefully, without being detected. Of course, he does not just do that. He ends up landing his saucer and becoming involved with the character of Jane. So there is a romantic relationship there and some great fish out of water and culture shock type moments and some nice little character moments and observing society moments and the like in the future and the past. And in the sequel, another flip for Dominic, they do more of the same types of things in slightly different ways with more different little observations about these different time frames and characters and relationships in a nice little blend of humor and romance and time travel science fiction.
All in all, quite a fun show and recommended by both of us here on British Invaders. Do let us know if you've had a chance to check it out yourself.
Yes, please do.
And please come back and join us next time when we are switching to ITV and going back to a show from 1977 called Alternative 3. And we're not going to say too much about this show in advance, other than to say that if you can, this is one to watch before you listen to our discussion next time, Brian.
Yes, I would agree with that. I will say that it was part of a series of science documentaries called Science Report, but we do have good reasons to include it in a science fiction podcast. So that's the hint I'll give you. It's definitely an interesting one to check out if you don't know it.
Very good. Look forward to it.
You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com. And you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, this is Eamon in England saying, see you on the flip side.